What does a hard-drinking, chain-smoking, workaholic homicide detective do when he retires? Well, if you're John Rebus, the protagonist of Ian Rankin's best-selling police procedural set in Edinburgh, you find a hobby, like investigating cold cases the police don't have time for. In the latest in the series, Rather Be the Devil, Rebus takes on the unsolved 40-year-old murder of a wealthy socialite. It is published by Little Brown, and I'm very pleased that it brings Ian Rankin back to our show today. Welcome back.
Thank you.
This is the 21st book in the series, and it's also the 30th anniversary of the first Rebus novel, Knots and Crosses. What's it like to write about and live with a character like Rebus for so many years?
It's tough. Especially when I decided that he would live in real time. So, you know, the Rebus we know now is in his mid-60s. And as my wife said to me a couple of years ago, he should be having some health issues by now. You know, bearing in mind what you've just said about him drinking too much and smoking and not taking care of himself, no exercise, bad diet, everything else. So she's got a friend she plays bridge with, her bridge partner, who's a doctor, a GP, general practice doctor in Edinburgh. And so I sat down with her and said, what would you expect this guy to present if he walked into your surgery? And that's what he's dealing with in the latest book. He's dealing with mortality.
When you wrote that first book, I suspect you didn't imagine that you'd still be writing about him 30 years later. Do you feel like he's a member of the family?
I wonder who he is, actually. I mean, I guess he's in some ways, he's my Mr. Hyde, so that I can be nice Dr. Jekyll. You know, he's the nastier side of my personality, perhaps, that a lot of mystery and crime writers and thriller writers have. We've obviously got this darker side of our nature that we need to explore, and he allows me to do that safely. No, I mean, he was in that first book, and it was meant to be the last book. So in the first draft of the first book, he died at the end. And fortuitously, I decided in the second draft that he would survive. It's fun hanging out with him because he's allowed me to look to explore the darker side of Edinburgh and Scottish life and politics and ask some big moral questions of the readers. And they seem to come to crime fiction for those big moral questions.
When you first started writing about him, did you give him a precise backstory or...
Too precise.
And then now you've had to live with it. I suspect every so often you'll write something and think, wait a minute, that wouldn't be possible. In 1987, he was in Ireland, not in Scotland.
Yeah. I mean, luckily there was a fan of the books a few years ago who put together a sort of biography of Rebus, bearing in mind everything that had happened to him in previous books, so that I could know that he's scared of flying and why is he scared of flying. And I mean, in this latest book, he's got a pet dog, and I was 100
named
pages...
Named Brillo.
And I was 100 pages in before I remembered he had a dog, because he'd only got the dog in the previous book. And I went, oh no, I've got to go back and put Brillo in. Yeah. So stuff like that. It's interesting, but when you load them with all that baggage remains, and you've got to remember it for the next books.
And we learn that he's the grandson of a Polish immigrant and the son of a stage hypnotist. He served in the army in Northern Ireland before he joined the police force. He's divorced, has a daughter. You have to keep track of all those
details. He's now a grandfather as well. His daughter has now got a kid, so he's a grandfather. And in the latest book, he's awkwardly thinking about what that means. How does a grandfather act?
You mentioned that you decided from the start to have him age normally. A lot of crime writers just ignore that.
Yeah, some do and some don't. I think in the Golden Age it was possibly more, you know, frequent that the detective wouldn't age, wouldn't change throughout this course of the series. But, you know, you look at someone like Michael Connelly's Harry Bosch would be the equivalent in the States, probably. He's, you know, got to an age where he had to retire from the police to bring him back in as a consultant. That's sort of the stage that Rebus is at. I mean, he's already retired previously. Retired at the end of book 17, and then I managed to find a way to bring him back for a few books.
He retired in Exit Music?
Yeah, which was meant to be the final book.
And you thought that was going to be
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
So what happened? He just kept on niggling at you?
More or less, Leonard, I think that's about right. I mean, I got an idea for a story, and it was a cold case, and I knew there was a unit in Edinburgh that dealt with cold cases, and it was staffed by retired detectives. And I thought, well, do I invent a retired detective for this book, or do I bring back the retired detective I already have? Mm. And I was worried that his voice wouldn't be there, because there'd been a five-year gap between the books, but he just leapt out. So I unlocked a little cell in my head, and he just ran out.
Well, his voice is different anyway because he's got a nasty cough from all of the things.
Now he's got all
his drinking and all the health, the consequences of his bad habits that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, readers worry about him, you know, in a way that I don't always worry about him.
He's got, is it bronchitis?
Yeah, COPD it's called, pulmonary disorder. And so he's on an inhaler for that. And
is he still drinking?
No, he's kind of trying to give up, but he's finding it hard. He has given up cigarettes, which he's finding pretty tough, but he's managing that so far. The drinking he's cutting back on, he's trying to lose a little bit of weight.
And he's got a girlfriend.
He's got a lady in his life, hooray. I mean, he's had girlfriends in the past, but none that my wife has liked. So again, they haven't stuck around for too long.
So how much of these books have to do with pleasing your wife?
Yeah, quite a lot. I mean, she's the first editor, you know, she's the first person who reads them. And she's been with me since 1981. We started dating in 81. So she's been around for the entire length of the series and then some. And she's the first person that reads them. She'll give me feedback. She'll say, I don't like this, I don't understand that. We solve problems together, so if I've got a problem, I'll say, how can I get Rebus from this place to that place? She'll come up with some ideas.
I'm speaking with Ian Rankin about the 21st book in his series about Rebus. This one, Rather Be the Devil, and he's just 7 days into quitting smoking, I think, when the book begins. The main thing that he can't give up is investigating crimes. In this case, a 40-year-old case of a banker's wife named Maria Turkand, who was strangled in her room in Edinburgh's most luxurious hotel. Was he assigned to that case?
He was originally, and then because he was a bit obstreperous, they decided to knock him back and send him back to the police station. And it always niggled that he wasn't able to play any role in the case. So when he retired, he took a lot of case files with him that he probably shouldn't. And they all
wouldn't he break the law by doing that?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't bother him, you know, especially now that he's retired. He's no longer a cop. They can't kick him off the force. So he's got this spare bedroom in his apartment, and it's just full of these unsolved cases that, you know, I've met a lot of detectives, not just in the UK, but in the States and elsewhere. They've all got a lot of cases that were never solved, and they wish they could still play a role in. And I guess that's a bit of wish fulfillment, because Rebus, as a civilian, gets to investigate crimes from the past. And if you're a real-life retired detective, you probably wouldn't get that opportunity.
Well, there were plenty of suspects at the time. Her husband, her lover, a famous rock star staying at the hotel. But they couldn't solve it then. Wouldn't it be a lot harder now, because a lot of the witnesses would no longer either be alive or be able to be found?
Yeah, it's true. Although in some cases now, they're managing to, the Scottish police are very good at keeping evidence. And so there was a case a little while ago, a couple of teenage girls. In fact, it is referenced in the book, The World's End Murders, a couple of teenage girls who were killed in 1977. And only in the last few years did DNA technology allow them to go back to the clothing and get a DNA fingerprint that was enough to actually convict someone of the crime. So some crimes, yes, as the years progress, there's less chance of catching somebody. But you've got the guilty conscience, you've got the deathbed confession, you've got people suddenly coming forward and saying, I remember something, and you've got changes in technology, which means that there's no such thing now as an unsolvable crime. Only crimes are waiting the technology to come along to solve them.
As long as they kept the DNA evidence, things like that. In this case, he is helped by his old colleagues, Siobhan Clark and Malcolm Fox, and they're investigating the beating of a career criminal and what seems like a feud between rival gangs. He can help them with their case a bit if they help him with his?
Yeah, because one of the suspects in the kind of beating up of the young gangster is an old gangster, Maurice Gerald Cafferty, Big Ger, who's the sort of eminence grise who has, you know, been in the series throughout, who has controlled Edinburgh. Now he's a similar age to Rebus.
Has he retired as well?
Kind of. He's kind of like Rebus to that. They're like two old boxers who just refuse to leave the ring. You know, their time has passed. They should be gone, but they just refuse to step out the ring. And they're both thinking the same thing. They're both wondering if they have any useful role to play.
But can Rebus do things or say things that he couldn't when he was on the force?
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's one of the challenges is, you know, having taken him out of the force, is you say, okay, how can he inveigle his way into investigations? Well, you find ways to do that. But he's also got freedom that he didn't have. He's now like a private investigator almost, a consulting detective. So he doesn't have to follow the rules, obey the rules, or obey the bosses anymore. He's his own boss.
And as you kind of hinted earlier, the city of Edinburgh is almost like a character in these books. Has it changed even more than Rebus over the last 30 years?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there have been huge structural changes. There have been political changes.
Didn't vote for Brexit.
Oh, no. I think Edinburgh was the least Brexit-friendly city in the UK.
And why would that be? Does it feel a connection to Europe?
Scotland has always felt a connection to Europe. I mean, if you go back far enough in history...
Because that Mary Queen of Scots?
You'll find the Scots and the French ganging up on the English if you go back far enough. The French king, his bodyguard, used to be entirely composed of big, burly Highlanders from Scotland. We've always felt that connection. And, of course, a lot of trading would go on from Scotland to Denmark and to Norway and also to the Netherlands. So there was a lot of trade with Europe and with Northern Europe. And we do feel, we've always felt European. And also Edinburgh, you know, being a centre of banking and insurance and these sort of technological industries, wants to feel like a world player. And why would you cut yourself off? Why would you sever ties from the world?
But Scotland decided not to cut itself off from England.
It decided not to cut itself off from the UK. 55-45 was the vote to stay in the UK. And it's problematic. You know, people are now starting to say, well, look, with England dragging you out of Europe against your will, is it time to have another vote on independence?
Can you do this every 10 years?
Well, every 3 or 4, it seems like, almost. I mean, a bit like in Canada with Quebec in Canada. The problem is that you'd be saying, okay, we want to do away with 60% of our trade because 10% of our trade or whatever, 15% of our trade is with Europe. So again, I think it's a difficult ask for people. But emotionally, people are starting to say, wait a minute, we can't. There is this disconnect politically between what the Scots feel and what people seem to feel, not in London per se, but in Westminster. I mean, London voted to stay in Europe by a decent sized margin. And most of the cities in England actually voted to stay in Europe. It was a little bit like the stuff you had here with President Trump. It was the periphery, and it was the people that we don't really hear about. It wasn't the major cities. It was everybody else who usually doesn't get a voice who said, we want a voice this time.
In this book, you also look at the rivalries within the police force between the regular detectives and elite units set up to investigate terrorism or organized crime. Do you have people you can consult in the police force who fill you in on all of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I've got certain contacts, and I was able to go to this brand new shiny facility, the Scottish Crime Campus, where all these people are based. And I decided that one of my detectives, Malcolm Fox, would have been promoted to there because he's a bit of a pen pusher. He's a bit of a yes man. He's a good guy. He doesn't make waves, so he would be prime for that sort of position. Unfortunately, I made a mistake. I thought I'd been told there that this place, this Gart Cosh it's called, which is a Scottish crime campus, would investigate that kind of financial crime. And when the book was published, somebody got in touch who works in that department and said, well, actually, it'd probably be our department in England that would deal with that. We wouldn't deal. I said,
well, this is fiction.
If it had been a department in England, I couldn't have written the book. So come on, give me a break here. This is a problem of writing about the real world, Leonard. It tends to kick you back when it can.
You've won quite a few awards, an Edgar, a Gold Dagger. There have been 2 TV series based on the Rebus books. And now you, is there talk about anything other than this Rebus Fest in Edinburgh this summer?
We're going to have a 2-day festival celebrating 30 years of Rebus. That is definitely going to happen. There's always talk about Rebus coming back on screen, big screen, small screen, even a stage play. I'm in negotiations at the moment about maybe putting it on stage, either new material or one of the books.
Would you want to write a play?
I've written one once before. I did one, Dark Road, it was called. It ran in Edinburgh for a few weeks very successfully in terms of getting bums on seats, but it hasn't toured. It was published. You could get the text of it. So if anybody out there wants to have a look at it and put it on as a play in the States, that would be great. It was cops, but it was a female cop at the top of her game and about to retire with some unfinished business. It's a different challenge.
But about long-form TV series?
Yeah, the problem with Rebus, when they put it on TV originally, they did it as 1 hour per book, which is a 45-page script. Mm-hmm. So they just chucked the book away, kept the title, and made up their own storylines. I didn't like that. So I got the rights back, and I hopefully now we can persuade a producer that what it needs is 6 hours or 8 hours, the kind of long-form TV that, you know, is people are starting to turn to.
Can you imagine retiring for good or even killing him off?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can.
I
suspect you're going to do another book.
Well, from one book to the next, I don't know. I mean, this year, because we're celebrating 30 years and because I've got a lot of touring, I'm not writing a book. So this is my sabbatical year. And maybe I get to recharge my batteries, think about what I've not done yet with Rebus, what I've not said yet, what needs to be said, what else can I do with him. You know, he's retired now, so there's limited opportunities for him investigating crime. And it could be that eventually he does have to shuffle off the stage. But he ain't going to go willingly, I'll tell you that.
Ian Rankin will be giving a talk at Little City Books on Bloomfield Street in Hoboken tonight at 7 o'clock. Then tomorrow night he will be speaking at the Center for Fiction at 17 East 47th Street at 7. For information on all of those things, you can go to our show page at wmyc.org/lopate. Where is your biggest audience? Is it in Scotland? Is it in the UK? Or
it'd be the UK.
How big is it in the United States?
It's growing in the States, which is you know, fantastic. And you know, any writers out there or people who want to be writers, don't give up. Because I didn't hit the New York Times bestseller list until about book number 20. So just never give up, I would say. Yeah, UK is a big market. States is a huge market for me. In foreign language, Germany. Germans love their crime fiction.
Rather Be the Devil is published by Little Brown. Thank you, Ian Rankin, for being on our show again.
Thank you.